one of my favorites from Lorena McKennitt called Tango to Evora. Lorena has an amazing voice, and she really can move people with that voice. She's really one of those people that, you know, is more than just a singer-songwriter. Yeah. Some people really have that magic, and she definitely does, which is why I often like to begin this show with that song. And, hey, it's kind of damp and gloomy out there, but, you know, it's going to be a beautiful weekend, beautiful Friday here in Portland, and it's the Rose Festival. Woohoo! At least the roses are out. That's a good thing. But also the Navy has come upstream to spawn, and gazillion tourists have poured into downtown. So, you know, what can I say? It's that time of year again. Watch out. Watch out for the crazy tourists. And stop to smell the roses. So this is Melody Silverwolf, and I'm here with you. I'm going to be half of the hosting team this morning on Positively Revolting Talk Radio here on KBOO Community Radio, which is, you know, all about you. This is a talk show, and my lovely co-host, Ani Haynes, will be joining me in just a moment. And this morning, you know, our lives, like no doubt, like many viewers, have been insane lately. And, you know, we just really couldn't come up with a single topic that we really wanted to focus on this week. So we decided that the most important thing to do was just to kind of throw it open and just really hear from all those of you out there, the voices of the listeners, the voices of the community. And, I mean, we all have so many things that we could just, like, you know, wave a sign and go, ah! About, and we're sure you do too. You know, that's what we want to talk about.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Ani. And yeah, like, what a week. Where do you start?
Good question.
Because I don't know. And for me, it's like the political world, the outside world, that's a good half of the picture. But the inside world has been just about as tumultuous in my own personal sphere, right? Because there's always the idea that your backyard's really what affects you. Sure, we're all affected by everything. The chaos effect exists.
The butterfly
wing.
You know,
it's all true. Mm-hmm. However, what happens, well, in your family, in your community, you know, in your city, the closer it is to home, the more it seems to have personal impact in your life,
well,
I would say.
Just like, you know, a ripple in a pond, if you're really close to it, then it strikes you a lot.
It's more like a big splash.
Yes, if you're far, far away in the pond, then it's just a little ripple, you know?
Right. Well, so
but even
my life
some of those
kind of
ripples are building into a big wave.
and so I just wanted to, you know, just throw that open. I feel like this entire week, it's left me sort of, like, bewildered, a little wary, a little weary. A little just tired.
So I feel like things are sort of cracking apart in, like, you
personally
know?
And politically.
Well, it's like looking at lava that you think is cooled, and all of a sudden it cracks open and you see it's still red inside, you know, and you're like, oh, what's in there? Is it going to crack more? Am I going to fall in? You know?
So, you know, that's sort of phone calls. I actually want to hear from folks this morning. As Melody said, sort of a free-formish show.
Not that we don't want to hear from you every week, but especially today.
But yeah, I mean, usually we try to, you know, ask you to stay on topic. This morning, I want to hear what has really kind of made you apoplectic. Again, personal, political, you know, to me, I'm really interested in knowing how you're doing as well.
Yeah.
Because for me, I mean, politically, oh my God. So on the oh my God side, so finally, other people are taking note of the story of the massacres in Haditha and Balad. And, you know, finally people are noticing that. Maybe, you know, the phosphorus attacks that the Italian press reported last year, you know, will somehow get to the American press too. It's to me, on the hopeful side, there's actually some U.S. press that are now sort of reporting that American soldiers may be involved in massacres and, you know, that there may be war crimes being committed.
And maybe.
For, you know, those of us who, say, follow foreign press more or listen to Democracy Now!, for months we've known about Haditha. Or at least the allegations, the stories, the gosh, you know, that just sounds a little too pattern-like when it comes to our military incursions.
Sounds a little too familiar for
right,
those of you who remember
right.
the Vietnam War.
Right, and, you know, that whole collective punishment thing. Oh, my God, such an evil that is. So, you know, that's on my mind. So both the horror of the war crime, the horror of the fact that our press ignores it for as long as absolutely possible until finally, you know. And when I say our press, I mean the owners of our press. You know, because a few really brave journalists keep trying to get these stories out there. Keep trying. But the owners of the press don't really feel like it's in their best interest.
Some of them get killed for it, as we saw yesterday on the news.
Yeah. So, you know, we need to, yeah, I think, talk about the fact that our country's involved in war crimes. I know listeners to cable, we talk about that.
Well, and we need to talk about some of the letters to the editor I've been seeing that are like, oh, well, that there's nothing wrong with that. Those people were perfectly justified in shooting all those little children. I was like, okay.
Yeah, we call that the good German syndrome.
And what planet are you from?
The good German planet.
Oh,
I mean,
it was sickening.
It's frightening is what it is. So then on the plus side, you know, there's this really moment. There's a moment. Good moment, that momentous moment. I don't know. It's a moment where we have Hans Blix and crew calling for the absolute outlawing of nuclear weapons and weapons of mass destruction.
Well, he should know.
The Blix team, officially called the Weapons of Mass Destruction Commission, has advanced 60 concrete proposals on how the world could be freed of nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons. He says, so long as any state has such weapons, especially nuclear arms, others will want them. Okay, departing from the quote, like, duh. You know,
yes.
I mean, oh, I'm just going to be at the whim of this bully over here who happens to have the best, most sophisticated weaponry in the world, and I'm not going to really try to develop anything that could possibly protect
me or my interests.
He's not going to
let me have one.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, yeah, if anyone has one, everyone's going to want one.
Well,
right? Right.
It goes without saying.
So going back, but you know, since the report decided it was important to say, I just thought I'd say it again.
Time to state the obvious.
You know,
in a time of chaos,
seems,
it helps to restate the obvious sometimes.
It seems, because it seems like so many people forget the obvious in times of chaos. So the report goes on to say, so long as any weapons remain in any state's arsenal, there is a high risk that one day they will be used.
And haven't
by
we been
design
saying
or
this
by
since
accident.
At least the 70s now?
The report says any such use would be catastrophe. And yeah, we have been saying it since the 70s. In fact, people have been saying it since the 60s. In fact, some people, brave
have been saying
souls,
it since before it was even developed. Yes.
Were saying it as yes. it was being, well, as soon as it was known. As soon
yes.
as it was known.
I mean, I distinctly recall doing a lot of anti-nuclear work back in the mid-80s, and, you know, it seems like a broken record. We said it over and over.
Yeah, that's what I focused my whole high school on. Right? I'm going to be 40 this year. I mean, some of us have known this. Others of us have not. And now it's actually, you know, there at the UN, there's an international, like I said, international commission. It's urging the UN General Assembly to convene a world summit. That's the first step they're asking for, is the convention of a world summit.
Well, that sounds like could be a serious disaster.
About non-proliferation and terrorist use of weapons of mass destruction. And I would define terrorists, well, you know, in that broad sense of using terror to get your political way.
Well, you mean like George W. Bush?
And I would say that would apply to any state that threatens the use of nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. That's another reason I could be apoplectic.
I mean,
this
they're
morning.
Seriously talking, seriously discussing using so-called tactical nuclear weapons in the Middle East. It's like, are you people insane?
Yes, would be the answer to that. Yes, they are. Okay, try this one on for size.
We're just starting the show, and I'm already just like, ah! I want to run outside and hide somewhere.
Try this one on for size. Also surfacing this week is an ancient letter that was tendered, that was, that was conveyed. A letter between members of the Yale Skull and Bones Society. back in 1918, I believe the date was.
Oh, yeah, the smoking gun.
The smoking gun, right?
So Steely Geronimo.
There has so long been a rumor that the Skull and Bones Society, right, the super secret society that seems to turn out presidents and presidential candidates in wild abandon, super secret society at Yale, that had a ceremony of initiation that has been rumored to involve, it's been rumored to involve a range of activities, but the consistently
some of them most, involving a coffin.
The consistently most seemingly plausible or collaborated or corroborated.
These have been witnesses.
The one that seems to be sticking is kissing a skull that is reported to be, reputed to be, Geronimo.
And certainly the people who it was stolen from have believed that for some time.
Yes. And so there's this letter, and it was circulated. So the rumor is, in fact, that there was a team of folks that went from the Skull and Bone Society and took the remains from the burial site in Fort Sill, Oklahoma. And so a Yale historian recently recovered a letter from 1918 that appears to support that theory. So the story goes, there's this group of students that stole the remains, being a femur, a skull, and some things that he was buried with.
This is outrageous.
And amongst them is Bush's grandfather, Prescott Bush, right? One of the grave robbers is the is the grandfather of our selected commander in chief.
You mean Commander Bunny Pants?
Uh huh. So I just wanted to put that out there, right? And of course, Bush himself is a member of the Skull and Bone Society, as was John Kerry.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the letter actually says it's from Winter Mead to fellow society member F. Truby Davison. It says, amongst other things, the skull of the worthy Geronimo the Terrible, exhumed from its tomb at Fort Sill by you, are safe inside the tomb together with his well-worn femurs, bit, and saddle horn. All right. So there's that. So there's, grave robbing.
They'll no longer be able to deny that it's really there.
Yeah, that's kind of, I don't know. That kind of makes it look bad for the Skull and Bones Society.
I think that the chief of that nation who has been after them to give it back is going to be, shall we say, paying them another visit.
So much to go on about, but I want to hear from you. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. That's 503-231-8187. War crimes, the long war. There's a great article by Tom Hayden talking about turning the tide. Can we?
There's a new
turn
report out by Robert Kennedy Jr. detailing in great detail, even more than Mark Crispin Miller was able to procure, exactly all the crimes that were committed stealing the 2004 election in Ohio, and people are mighty worried about that one. They're like, he's got the goods on us. I mean, it's all cracking apart.
It is all cracking apart. So there's a couple of things beyond the personal venting. Beyond the, oh my God, look at this, and there's this over here, and hey, did you ever notice this one over here? Because really, it's a little too much to keep track of, frankly.
And I know several people who are experiencing serious personal trauma as well. I think some people are
sort of... Go ahead and up that at least by five.
Yeah, people are just sort of falling apart.
It's true.
You know?
That's what I'm alluding to. I mean, a number of people, you know, and I was having a conversation actually with another community activist and volunteer a few months ago, and we were wondering, because we had both been noticing a significant increase in personal stress, like in our family, in our friends, in people, not being healthy. And we were wondering, you know, really, how much of that is due to the pressures, the external pressures of the political climate?
It's just kind of that whole, like, crucible thing.
Right. The critical mass. We're about to melt.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's not what I meant to say. I mean, what I also am wondering, and here we go, trying to come back to a positive. How? I want to know the how-tos.
Well,
I want to hear from you, too.
I
want to hear from you about creating solidarity. I mean, it's a conversation we get back to over and over again. And I want to hear ideas. I want to know how we actually move forward together. How do we do that? With all of the isms, with all of the privilege that still goes unacknowledged in our society, is it even possible to create a movement that is actually practicing solidarity?
Well, you know, it's just like I used to work with someone here in town. Many of you, I'm sure, know her, Kathleen Sadat, a wonderful woman and activist. And she had this drawing from a coloring book tacked up over her desk. It says, B is for boat. And underneath she had written, we are all in the same one. And it's really true. You know, we just need to remember that.
True enough. But what do you do when you're working with people that forget? You know, what do you do when people in your family forget? What do you do when people in your neighborhood forget? What do you, you know, so how do we create solidarity beyond our personal realizations, which I'm sure everyone that is listening has a personal realization that we need solidarity? Yeah, I know we need it, but that don't mean we have
it. Maybe we all need to wear t-shirts
to
say
that
so we can remind each other constantly. I don't know.
Maybe that's it. Maybe we start going back to greeting each other as, hey, brother, hey, sister. I don't know. But I want to hear from you. What are your ideas on creating solidarity? How are you actually working to implement that mentality, that atmosphere for yourself, for your own life, and for the movement?
How are you maintaining your sanity? Or if you're not, what are you doing instead?
And over and above, I guess I just want to put out there a plea this morning, my personal request of the universe, and that is for everyone to remain open of heart in a time of fear and panic. Because to me, I think that's a core in a lot of different ways. It's a fearful time. It's an uncertain time. It's a quicksand, like under your feet kind of time. And people are closing up. People are being afraid. And it's affecting our health. It's affecting our relationships. It's affecting our communities. It's affecting our world. And so we got to make ourselves healthy as we try to better the world, right? It's not like we have to sacrifice ourselves to better the world. That does not work. So that's sort of where I want to start out with. And good morning to you. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning. Morning.
Well, I don't know if I can help with the how I'm maintaining my sanity part. I'm not sure I'm sane, but I'm maintaining, I think. This is Sandy Burns.
I know. Hi, Sandy. How the heck
good
are
morning.
You?
Good morning. It's been a long time,
it's
huh?
Like, oh, my God, this is Sandy. I know it's Sandy.
I'm usually in the car on the road with no phone available when you're doing this show. I just called this morning because we have a war happening right here in our own country against us.
Yes, for sure.
And in particular, I would like to draw people's attention to what's happening with the over 13,000 registered patients in the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program.
Please do.
There is a council called the Governor's Council on Alcohol and Other Drug Abuse Programs. I have been attending meetings of that council since the early 80s, and I'm very, very concerned about a report they issued about a month and a half ago called The Domino Effect, Rebuilding Substance Abuse Prevention, Treatment, and Recovery. Basically, I look at it as a declaration of war against the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. In this report,
obviously they find us very threatening.
Oh, it's just amazing. There are 13,000 patients now registered.
Nearly 15.
We have been legal for since 1998.
Mm-hmm.
We have not heard any huge problems. In fact, in direct questions to Dr. Higginson, the chief health officer for the state of Oregon, we have asked if there have been any major health problems resulting from this, and he responded that he didn't know of any. So the fact that this program says that the medical marijuana program complicates prevention efforts in the schools, confuses our youth.
Oh, baloney.
They receive clear messages that marijuana is a dangerous, illicit drug, yet they know it is prescribed for specific medical conditions. Well, so is morphine, so is methadone. And even acetaminophen, you know, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, aspirin and acetaminophen, are now killing as many people as all illegal drugs combined.
Yeah, all that liver damage kills some people.
Well, also bleeding out in the stomach, because it does cause you often to bleed
right,
to death.
Right, internally.
And we've got this going on, and in this same report, they say that there are no dollars given by the OLCC for any of the money that is collected from hard liquor sales for treatment. Now, I know that there are people that go to treatment for marijuana abuse, supposedly. Generally, I think you would find that most of those people went to treatment because they were forced to go there because they tested positive in a job situation.
The judge sent them.
But we all know the issues with alcohol, and the fact that the OLCC is not giving up any of the money that they're making, not all of it, like I think they should give all the money that's collected to prevention and treatment efforts before they use any of that money for anything else, like, you know, fixing roads and bailing out from debts. It is just outrageous that there's no money going into alcohol prevention and treatment from them. But right now, what they've got in mind is to raise the fees of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, which just had to be raised again after the legislature stole nearly $1 million from our fund.
Well, fortunately, they don't get to make that decision.
Right, and they, you know, they took that money from people who are sick and
dying
to help balance this the Human Resources Fund, which is, I mean, Human Services, which is already way, way in debt again. So, you know, it's just outrageous that they raised the fees from $55 up to $100, and now they would like to add another $50 onto that and take all that money for prevention and treatment. Now, this is money that is supposed to be, and when it was passed, that money was supposed to be only used to administer the program.
Well, right, because the program, there was a clause that said that state funds could not, otherwise generated state funds, could not be put towards the program.
Right.
It had to be self-supporting.
Well, you know, I look at all of this and I wonder, and maybe what we need to do, you know, this is just sort of a thought that I've had for a while now. If we're willing to take money from the sick and the dying,
and then
to help
them
fund our government, then how about this would solve the problem about confusing kids. How about we allow everybody 21 and older who can pass the same criminal background check that the patients have to go through be allowed to pay a permit to cultivate and possess marijuana for their own personal use within the same guidelines? If we don't have any problem taking money from medical marijuana patients so that they can grow their medicine, then why don't we just go all the way and say, okay, how about everybody 21 and older being able to possess marijuana in the same
Because that's too sensible. There you go again, being rational.
You and pragmatism.
I mean, and just think about it. It would be a different situation, because with the medical marijuana program, this is so people can have their medicine, and a lot of those people are so ill they have no money. But in another situation, this other one that I'm talking about, these would be people who were electing to do this.
True enough.
So couldn't we afford to charge a little bit more? You know, what if we were able to charge all these people, say, $200 for a permit, or even $300 for a permit once a year? And then we would do away not only with all the money that we would be spending trying to, you know, indict and prosecute people in jail, we would save all kinds of money in the human resources part, where we're taking care, you know, welfare and food stamps, all the people that go to jail. We would save all that money that we're currently spending on, you know, all the criminal justice aspect of it as well. So not only would we be making money, we would be saving a lot of money, and then those darn kids wouldn't be so confused.
But
because everybody's 21
evil.
And older.
Thank you for your call this morning. You know, those are great points. Obviously, we need to return to the topic at length sometime soon, as it's a changing situation always really support patients maintaining their rights. When you look at how marijuana has helped some patients, it's remarkable. And again,
save some people's lives.
I absolutely agree with you, Sandy, that when you're talking about people who are living on disability, who are already facing huge expenses in their lives on limited income because of their particular challenge. Another $50 is a burden. So
yeah. A lot of people just simply can't afford to sign up for the program, and so they just risk being arrested because they don't have the money.
And it's and to folks who aren't on disability and who have, you know, a job that pays above minimum wage, you go, well, it's $50 in a year. What?
Mm-hmm.
It's important. And this is one of those things I want to return to just about like every day of my life, reminding people that really, some folks are struggling. Some folks are struggling to make it. And it's one of those things I hear kind of glibly tossed off way too often.
Some people would just as soon put those people out on an ice floe and give them a push. You know, they really don't have any compassion for people who are suffering.
So, well, let's go ahead and take our next caller. Let me remind you, you are listening to KBOO Radio. It's 8:00 in the morning.
Give or take 4.5 minutes.
Yeah. KBOO FM Portland, good morning to you. You are on the air.
Good morning. I hate to regress so far, but
regress.
Last week, one of your callers made a statement about solar energy.
Uh-huh.
And I have to correct him because it's just been bugging me a whole week. And he said that he thought that the energy return on solar panels, the electric kind, was negative, which means you didn't get a payback from them. And so I looked it up, and it's not true. So that's a modern myth. And if you go to the National Renewable Energy Laboratory site on the web, it basically states that solar panels pay back their energy in 1 to 4 years. So the energy it takes to create these things is paid back within 1 to 4 years.
Well, I thought
he meant you don't get your investment back totally for a long time, that you paid out for them, you know, to buy them and install them.
Well, I mean, with some people, I know I looked into it for our small business, and they would actually have paid back, they calculated, just about 4 years.
Yeah, but maybe for a business that's true, because you probably use more energy than the average resident.
Well, we don't, actually, because it's not that kind of, it's not a manufacturing, but it's just that there's a larger tax rebate for commercial users than there is residential users.
I think there's probably a couple of other issues that he was trying to bring up. I'm not going to speak for him, and it was last week, and God knows my memory's good with conversations, but maybe not that good. But I think I remember another concern of his was around the actual material resource sort of cost of manufacturing photovoltaic cells. But as Melody pointed out last week, we know the technology is changing in that area,
right,
to really lessen the impact. But I think always you have to, you know, weigh out those things whenever you're looking at alternative energy technology, what's going to impact your particular geographic, you know, situation in the best way needs to be weighed out. And what's the best answer for some regions is not the best answer
right.
for other regions. But solar, you know, God knows, longtime supporter of solar myself.
And there's always the, see, I did something that I did what I could to make a difference factor. So you feel good about it, you know.
And that's important.
It costs you a little money.
It's important to do what you can.
I think that people should definitely take the long view and always look from the extraction process to throwing it back in the garbage or recycling the product. So they call it like weld wheels or whatever you want to call it. But they should look at the long view, and that's what these people were talking about. And they said that basically the energy recovery was
1 to 4 years. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for that information.
Thank you so much.
Right on.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 503-231-8187, the number to call. And, of course, always the reminder that we do have a slight delay. Just wanted to remind folks that when you're put in the queue, you know, remember to listen for us sing. Good morning. And good morning.
Hello?
You're on the air.
Hello. Yes, hello. I enjoyed the music. And I don't know how I can help heal this country. I've been working so hard trying to bring my broken down, broken apart family together, and the unhealthy forces seem to be stronger than my work. But anyway, in the meantime, I have a couple of questions. First of all, I was wondering how the people on the Tryon, I guess it's called Farm, are doing. And the second one is, I thought Code Pink and others were on Mother's Day and thereafter were going to surround the White House and do a vigil, whatever, whatever. So anyway, I'll just listen and thank you.
Mm. Well, Tryon Life Farm, Tryon Life Community Farm,
there.
Are doing well. They're doing well. They, for folks that were following, it's an intentional community, sustainability center, sort of a sustainability demonstration center, where it's like a living lab in intentional community, sustainable living,
a little farm in the
urban
city.
Farming. And it's tucked into Tryon Creek State Park up on Palatine, in the Palatine area.
Off of Boone's Ferry Road, yeah.
And, you know, they had a real big struggle for a while to actually buy the property.
I was really impressed that they pulled it off.
It was about to be turned into a subdivision of little houses that look the same, losing this vibrant, urban farm. Basically, and continuation of the green space of Tryon Creek Park. So anyway, they're doing well, and just wanted to let you know that. Look, this just in. Also, about Code Pink, there's going to be a show tonight at 6:30. It's Bread and Roses.
Hosted by someone who was there.
Crystal Lady. She is going to be reflecting with some interviews and stories of her experiences at Code Pink's Mother's Day vigil at the White House. So
that's tonight.
There's two things on Bread and Roses, just to let folks know. 6 o'clock, Jen Lavadier interviews Deborah O'Gara, member of the Tlingit tribe, an author and organizer who's working for same-sex marriage in Native American community. Then at 6:30, Crystal Leite is talking about her experiences with the Code Pink vigil at the White House. So I don't have any information on that. I have to say that was a story that I haven't followed. I know it happened, and that's about as much as I know. So I'll be listening tonight at 6:30 and learning more.
Crystal was there, and lots of other people were, too. So
hey,
you can hear
my
all
folks,
the details.
You are listening to your very own community radio station. This is KBOO, and I love those moments of synchronicity.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's because Kathleen is, you know, she's
Jane
ever on the
attentive.
Spot, listening. Yes, ever attentive.
God us bless Kathleen. And good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Do this.
Hi there.
Hi. And over the Memorial Day holiday, I had occasion to sing America the Beautiful, to lead other people in singing it and so forth. And the thing that really struck me that, you know, so often when, you know, the things that are discussed on KBOO and so forth are disparaged as being unpatriotic, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, nothing could be more patriotic than what is discussed on KBOO.
Well, yeah.
You know? And I think that, I really think that, you know, so often, like I say, we are separated from the mainstream by, we don't embrace some of the standard patriotic things as our own anthems. And one of the key verses in America the Beautiful, first of all, of course, we know it, the first verse goes, describes how beautiful the country is,
uh-huh.
You know, the earth and everything about it, its physical attributes. But I think it's the third verse that says, America, America, God, mend thine every flaw. Confirm thy soul in self-control, thy liberty in law.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah.
It's a good reminder that it has more than one verse.
We're out of control in the Middle East.
Right.
The current administration is doing everything in its damn power to undermine the Constitution, flaunting the law, taking on tyrannical or empirical power. I mean, help!
Right.
You know, and we really, I think it would do any harm at all to just be sing that with fervent patriotic confidence, you know, that criticism is the key.
Right, right.
Keeping this America.
Well, absolutely. The right to dissent is, in fact, what was being, well, vigorously protected.
And now the Bush crime family and the rest of the administration are basically trying to, they're working overtime to spread this thought pattern that if you don't repeat the Republican talking points verbatim, then you're a terrorist.
Yeah.
Not only, I mean, just, you know, it's like you don't even have to disagree openly. It's just that if you say, well, I'm a Democrat and I believe differently, I believe blah, 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 you're a terrorist, you know.
Well,
that's just absolutely insane.
We claim that we're acting in self-defense because we don't want terrorists to come to our country and murder us. And so we have gone into another country
and murdered other people.
And then and tragically, very tragically, because we know that war changes people, you know, and does things to people. There's no excuse, but the fact is now we do have. I mean, what is the definition of a terrorist? I would say it would be that if one, you know, that you go in and you shoot women and children to make the civilians say, "Don't mess with us." You know, we have
right.
the power. You know, and
right.
Hopefully these are isolated incidents, but one minutely isolated incident is one too damn many. And any discussion of there being legalities or any justification for any kind of torture is outrageously un-American. I mean, my dad fought in World War II, and who were the villains at that time?
Yeah.
The enemy who did torture.
Right.
And we have all this great wringing of hands about our men and women who were subject to torture and how evil it is. And to have anyone in our government suggesting that we could do the same thing and it be justified is enraging.
And the fact that we admit to participating in so-called extraordinary renditions.
Ugh. You know, it's like the big lie thing, you know, if the bigger, you know, it's like spit in my face and tell me it's raining.
Right.
You know, and I'll say, right. Uh-huh, how refreshing.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So thank you very much for your call this morning.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 503-231-8187. I would love as well, I guess, to believe that the massacre in Haditha, the massacre in Balid, the massacre in Fallujah a year prior, that the abuses in Abu Ghraib, that the abuses in Guantanamo, that the abuses at the Air Force Base in Afghanistan, because of the bees, sounds like, okay, I can't remember it right now.
Bagram, is that
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it could be. Yep, I think that is. I'd love to believe that these were isolated incidents, but it's not plausible, is it? I mean, there's too bloody many of them. And with Guantanamo and with the similarities of the prisoner abuses from base to base, from prison to prison, heck, from continent to continent, it's all of a piece. And anyone that needs more information on how all of a piece it is, needs to read, among other things, Chain of Command by Seymour Hersh. It was published about a year and a half ago.
Or you could just start by reading Riverbend's blog.
You know, there are many, many sources. But I do think that Seymour Hersh, investigative journalist, well-respected by many, he lays out an infutable case of how we got into this. Irrefutable.
For those who aren't familiar with who Riverbend is a young Iraqi woman who writes a blog. And if you just go to Google and type in Riverbend blog, you will find it. And it's very moving.
Yeah. There are really, there's a lot of good information out there. Read it. And you can't help but connect dots.
Well, and then speaking of connecting dots, let me share with you another lovely tidbit, which I believe you can read about in the Daily Kos. I think that's where the link came from, where I first read about it. some lovely person who thinks he's a Christian but is sadly misguided has created this video game, oh dearie me, where, oh my God, the person who plays the game is, you know, a soldier for Christ, and he goes around killing infidels. That would be Catholics. Geez, since when aren't Catholics Christians? Catholics and Jews and Muslims and Hindus, i.e. everybody who isn't
There's
a born-again
actually
Christian.
Actually long-standing anti-Catholic hatred.
Yes, and so you go around and you do this, and it's all, you know, you're saving the world for Christ. It's a Christian theocracy video game. I mean,
yes,
about training the future,
I've seen this.
Mass murderers of the world. Yikes.
Yeah, what can you do? There's a really excellent article, commentary, polemic on Common Dreams, which is, of course, commondreams.org. And it's called Tell Me, Captain, If You Know of a Decent Place to Stand. It's by Christopher Cooper. And it kind of summed up where I'm at as Melody and I were saying, well, where do we start? We're a little too apoplectic to even know where to begin this week. The first paragraph I just have to share. If I were wealthy and my family could afford hired minders to tend me instead of letting me engage the world loose and alone, the cute young thing serving the second shift tour would likely advise, maybe you shouldn't watch the evening news, Mr. Cooper. You know how it upsets you. Maybe, I'd snarl, maybe you should bring me a beer. But you know she'd be right. And
I've been known to shout at my television rather loudly.
He's bringing
loudly.
Up the fact that things have been hyper-militarized in this long, unending war, coming off of the Memorial Day weekend, reports on the Patriots fighting overseas and the sacrifices, which I, you know, certainly don't want to, I don't want to ever play down the sacrifices that are made by our servicemen and women. You know, giving your life for this lie is a horrifying thing.
It's one thing to go to defend your country in battle, and you're really defending against a real enemy. That's one thing, but what we're doing is not that.
And I just want to say my heart goes out to them, and I wish them all to return home safely.
Yes.
And I am appalled and outraged at how they're being used and how their lives are being put in harm's way for this lie that is the long, in fact, according to many in the administration or Pentagon, the never-ending war on terrorism. That is, it's wrong. And so, you know, this article is talking about that whole juxtaposition of these holidays, Memorial Day, we have Independence Day coming up, the hyper-militarism of our entire culture, and knowing that what that militarism is hiding are atrocities and genocide and horrors and massacres, and how it feels to actually be awake and knowing that these things are celebrating massacres. It's a good piece. I recommend it. So, without further ado, good morning. You are on the air.
Good morning. I want to touch on something that I consider to be a war crime committed by our wonderful House of Representatives, and that is in response. Well, the House Resolution 4681, the anti-Palestinian resolution that was just passed.
Oh, my.
Peter DeFazio and Earl Blumenauer voted against it. Unfortunately, the rest of our representatives, Huli Wu and Walden, voted for it. And this is collective punishment against an entire population for participating in a democratically fair election.
Can you give us details of the legislation? Because, again, this is one that slipped under my radar, and I'm really ashamed about that.
Okay, it's I'll repeat it. It's House Resolution 4681, and it had many many
It's a long and convoluted
Well, for instance, the Palestinians' representatives are to have their credentials pulled, so they are not to be allowed to come to the United States or participate at the United Nations. Israel is withholding $50 million a month that is Palestinian taxes due to the Palestinians.
This is outrageous.
The Israelis are withholding $50 million a month. This money is to pay the teachers, the doctors, the nurses, policemen.
Right.
And I read where it's between 165 to 152, 100,000 employees are not getting paid. In three months, they haven't been paid. 1 million people are supported. These are spouses, children, probably elderly parents that are supported by these incomes.
So was this just a resolution supporting Israel for doing this?
This is, it's many components to it. It's all punishing the Palestinians. As if the checkpoints and the incursions and all that wasn't
enough,
you know, to,
so
that
this
we
is passed,
support Israel's actions. But
so this has passed the House. Has
it passed the House? Well, look at the immigration law the House just passed. I mean, they are inhumane and brutal.
Yeah.
There is a legislation being considered in the Senate that is still, I think, a war crime, but it's less brutal. But if we can educate ourselves to what the Senate and the House are wanting to do to punish the entire Palestinian population.
Well, we can only hope that in November some of them go bye-bye.
Well, this is happening now, though. I mean, the Palestinians
that's,
are
that's not going to help us now. Right.
And the interesting thing is I read that the Truman Research Institute for Peace at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, that's a long title, I'm sorry, conducted a poll in March in which 62% of the Israelis polled favored negotiations with Hamas. So we have a government here in the United States acting more brutal against the Palestinian government than the Israelis even.
Well, it's all political agenda, obviously. It has nothing to do with even looking at the Palestinians as real people.
Right, it's not the Israeli people are looking towards. You know, we have a government here in the United States in conjunction with the Israeli government, and they're not working towards a negotiated peace.
No, that's and peace not, is not peace
I mean,
is not profitable.
It's no secret. Even though as this poll would suggest, 62% of the Israeli population would prefer a negotiated peace, even with Hamas.
Right.
And we have these inhumane, I say, war criminals creating a situation in Palestine, making it worse for the daily lives of ordinary Palestinians. And this is a war crime against people.
Hey, thank you very much for your call this morning.
Okay.
And thanks for bringing that to our attention, our audience attention.
Those of you who have Wu or Huli or Walden as your Congress critter, you know what to do.
And, well, it's, you know, chastise away. But, again, you know, there's so much going on. There's so much going on. And it's really hard to track everything. So we need to share information with each other. And I think a show coming up real soon might explore that issue a little more fully, because that's something that we all need to be very aware of. It is genocide, and it is happening kind of right now.
What the hell business is it of ours to tell the Palestinians how to live their lives anyway?
Yeah, well, we could go on.
Yeah.
Good morning to our next caller. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Good morning to you. You are on the air.
Thank you. Good morning, Ani.
Good morning,
Melanie.
Good morning.
Your caller that mentioned fighting tortures in World War II reminded me that the same guy who claims to have stolen Geronimo's bones is the only person prosecuted under the Trading with Enemies Act for loaning the money to Hitler.
Right, that's right. Prescott Bush was prosecuted under the Trading with Enemies Act.
Exactly.
So, okay, but grandfather of the selected.
Right.
Grave robber and banker to Hitler. We're loving the Bush family.
Great, a great guy.
Well, not so much.
George, you must be so proud of him.
Here's such a small thing. but it may be the thing. On WayneMadsenReport.com.
Yes.
What was that? What was that?
I love the Wayne Madsen Report.
I bet I know what you're going to say.
Oh, well, so guess.
Well, is this around Bush's familial traumas?
Yes. About Laura Bush moving out of the White House?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't buy it.
I want to see more information. I want to see more information because I love that story, which is why you heard me giggle as soon as you mentioned Wayne Madsen.
Mm-hmm. I knew what you were going to say.
I spent a delightful part of my yesterday talking about that.
I don't doubt that there's trouble in paradise between Georgie and Laura. Not at all. But I doubt that she's actually, I think that, you know.
I'm not going to doubt it, and I'm not going to believe it. I'm going to say that's a really interesting story, and I can't wait to find out more.
Well, it seems so simple that some press reporter at the Gaggle could ask Tony Snow, is Laura Bush in the White House?
Right.
I'm as much interested in seeing where more information comes from. I think the media are going, to try to stifle this just like they've stifled all of the other. And if no one asks the questions, then the media is convicted.
Well, it certainly seems to me that Condi Rice slipped up before calling Bush her husband.
Yes.
Well, there's all of this, but
I mean, it's like that particular part of it. I have to say, I've heard that at least twice over the last year.
Well, and we know for a fact that Laura and Bush lived apart before he was elected. In fact, he had to basically drag her from. She went back to Crawford after the inauguration, and he had to basically go get her and say, "Come on, you got to come to the White House, or you're going to embarrass me." So, yeah, they're not the closest happy couple in the world.
Well, I understand. The media are complicit. The media are in on it if they're not asking the question for more information.
I'd agree with you.
I mean, especially when you have
more information, and it should either confirm or deny.
Although I have to say I really don't care about Bush's marriage.
It's a small thing. Yeah. People are dying.
Right. Well, and not only that, but first of all, my biggest priority is that my representatives are actually elected and not appointed, outright thieving the election. So that's number one. But after that, you know, it's like once you cross that moral bridge and then you cross the war crimes bridge and all those stuff, you know, so his marriage is in trouble. I don't care about his marriage. I mean, ultimately, I just don't care about his marriage. But the fact that he is on this moral high ground, introducing next week, a potential constitutional amendment to ban queer marriage, you know, it's like, okay, I've been married to my wife for 12 years. We're totally into each other. I'm not having, like, affairs with Condoleezza Rice, or, you know, I want to quell that rumor right now. You know, so it's like, you know, here's my queer marriage. It's kind of a happy place to be, actually. And then you look at the hypocrisy going on of Bush being anti-queer marriage if his own is in trouble. And you kind of go, what a freaking hypocrite.
Well, I agree with you that the marriage is such... Their marriage is of zero interest to me. What my interest is the media.
Yeah, sure.
And supporting them.
Well, what do you expect when you have Mr. Fox Spinmeister Tony Snow as the White House spokesmodel?
Well, that's what you expect, and when people see it, they can boycott the newspapers and
just really can't believe anything. Or you could, I mean, some of what they say is true, but it's not the whole truth, you know.
It's true. We really need an accountable press corps, and I guess that's why I firmly, firmly support alternative independent media, because the owners of the corporate media are too heavily invested. In fact, they're not heavily invested. They are corporate America. And when you have, you know, MSNBC, GE, and you have CBS, Westinghouse, God knows what.
Viacom, right.
You know, it's like, these folks eventually are not going to allow earth-shattering stories out until there's that general tidal wave that's been created in independent press and in foreign press.
The reason why some of us call them the press corps.
Yeah, they're really sad and lacking in accountability right now.
What the individual can do about it is not buy it.
Yep.
Keep your money in your pocket. Sorry to distract from a more serious discussion.
Not at all.
But glad to.
Not at
it,
all.
If anybody brought any bit of levity from the
I love that track. Story. I love that story. Okay.
Thanks.
Bye. Wayne Madsen. I've had the opportunity to interview Wayne Madsen at least once, I think. At least once.
He's a trippy guy.
He's really interesting. I really love his website. I think he has a lot of good information. And it's, yeah. What can you say? 503-231-8187. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I'd like to comment on, I've heard this word collective responsibility a couple of times.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to emphasize that not collective responsibility, but collective punishment, I think that's the phrase. I'd like to emphasize that that is a war crime. It's carefully spelled out
yeah.
in the Geneva Conventions, all of them, even the early ones, 1907?
But doesn't Alberto Torquemada Gonzalez, doesn't he say the Geneva Conventions are just sort of this quaint notion? Wasn't that his legal opinion about,
Reminds me of that joke about the Ten Commandments are really the Ten Suggestions.
What was that?
That they're not really commandments; they're just suggestions. Is that?
Yes.
I was waiting for the next.
No,
one
I mean
too.
It's like that's an old joke, but I mean, yeah, it's like the Geneva Convention is just
it's
suggestions. Yeah, you don't have to follow those
guides to sort of general guidelines for good conduct, as opposed to international law and stuff. Okay,
I was looking on the, I was doing a little web searching here this morning when I was hearing this, and there is a concept of collective responsibility, and I found this on Wikipedia, and I'd like to share that.
Sure.
It says that is a concept or doctrine according to which people are to be held responsible for other people's actions by tolerating, ignoring, or harboring them, without actively collaborating in these actions. And
that's a weird definition.
No, I like
but this,
go ahead.
Yeah, and this concept is found mostly in the Old Testament. And examples include the flood, the Tower of Babel, Sodom and Gomorrah.
Uh-huh.
How did and so isn't that interesting?
Right.
There is a real basis for that idea.
Right. Right.
And I never realized that before.
It's absolutely, it is very, very biblically based. There's this chronology of events around the massacre in Haditha that I picked up in the Seattle Times. It's in today's Seattle Times, I believe. You can get it online, seattletimes.com, chronology of events. Starting with, the roadside bomb that went off November 19th, killing Lance Corporal Miguel Terrazas, a 20-year-old guy from El Paso, Texas. He was killed. In the following few hours, 24 Iraqis are killed. Marine investigators inspect the scene and take photographs. In December, the families of some of the dead are paid $2,500 each by the U.S. military. A U.S. officer says in May he paid out $38,000 in total compensation. Sort of saying, not accepting responsibility, but trying to, placate people, keep folks quiet. You could sort of maybe interpret that as... and it goes on, the timeline, people should check it out and really familiarize themselves with this incident. It is there's so much evidence around this being a collective punishment situation.
That in Fallujah is another great example.
Yeah, Fallujah is another good example, yeah.
And I think I heard that phrase used once or twice in the media, but not in mainstream, because it is a war crime, no matter how you look at it.
Yeah.
And And to accuse the U.S. of, you know, committing war crimes, well, that's kind of possibly even seditious, you know. But there is no higher authority. There is no world court that we recognize.
Right. Well, May 17th, Representative John Murtha, you know, who's a representative from Pennsylvania. He's a former Marine. He says, and he's a representative, you know, he's rather, well, shall we say, invested in the system. He says the military attempted a cover-up, and he accuses Marines of killing in cold blood. So, I don't know. It's not like I think sedition is limited to us rabble, but still, you know, at least we have some good company on this one because the transgressions are so, well, you know, just so full of horror and so egregious that the word has gotten out. And once the word is out, it's you just can't say this isn't a war crime, right? You just can't. So.
Yeah, there's so many things happening, like you say. My wife always suggests that I go get myself a bucket of sand, you know,
uh-huh.
stick my head in it,
uh-huh.
and that I'd be better off. And she's probably right.
Well,
I can't really argue.
You'd have better blood pressure, perhaps.
Yeah, you know. And I think, you know, a lot of people do that. But I kind of like your solution better, solidarity.
Uh-huh.
I think is a little more effective, more honest.
It feels better in the long run. It's really, you know, sticking your head in the sand, A, doesn't help, and B, it's not like you're not really aware at some level you're doing it. You know, I mean, that's when I talk to folks that say, oh, I don't get involved in that sort of stuff. That stuff makes me sick. That stuff makes me crazy. I can't listen to the news. You know, it makes me go, yeah, really? Well, why does it make you crazy? Oh, well, because they're really sensitive people, right? And when I engage folks in conversation, it's sort of like I just go along to get along, you know, just want to live my life because it's complex enough, you know, can't think about that because mm-hmm. I feel powerless to change it, mm-hmm. and I'll only make myself upset.
Reminds me of that song so by Jewel, I'm sensitive and I'd like to stay that way.
Right,
yeah.
And so it's like somehow or another we have to support our ostrich friends. And we have to like say, no, we all need to be in this together because no one's safe. And we want to make sure you're safe. And you need to help us be safe. And we need to change the system because the system is responsible for atrocities. And you know it. And it's kind of whether you want to look at the news or not. Because it does. You know, it does. So that's sort of how I think of our ostrich friends.
Yeah, and don't, whatever you do, you know, don't blame the media. I think Rumsfeld, when Abu Ghraib came out, one of his first responses was they need to ban cameras.
Right. Right.
No, we need more cameras. We need more truth to come out, and we need to find the root cause of all of this. Root cause is not a dirty word. And by the way, if you ever listen to what I call the hate radio, some of the AM talk shows.
Yeah.
You'll hear, you know, that phrase disparaged. They don't want to find the root cause. They want to deal with, you know, the real politics.
Right.
And
right.
But no, there's something about the root cause that's important. It's kind of a radical notion.
Why?
Indeed,
yes, by
it
definition.
Is. Hey, thank you very much for your call this morning.
Hey, see you later.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Well, hey, let you know here in about, 18 and a half minutes, it'll be 9 o'clock. And at that time, you don't want to go anywhere because it's APA Compass, featuring a visit to the campus of Portland Community College to discuss women of color in independent media and a live discussion about Asian and Pacific Islander GLBTQI perspectives. Now, there's some alphabet soup for you. And as usual, the Angry Asian Minute. At 10, the guest is Leslie Larson, whose first novel, Slipstream, is an ominous L.A. saga featuring the stories of several characters whose lives eventually collide. At 10:30, on Sounds of Awareness, Paul Van Dyke will interview Lisa Schmidt of the Nutter Corporation about dozer days. How could you be employed in a company like ours? That's an interesting question. And at 11, on Democracy Now!, hear about the Bush administration's ignoring of requests from Swiss officials to hand over information that would help prosecute alleged members of Pakistani scientists A.Q. Khan's underground nuclear network. And, of course, another topic is the story that former UN Chief Weapons Inspector Hans Blix called for a permanent worldwide ban on nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons yesterday. And as we were talking about earlier, tune in tonight at 6 for Bread and Roses. It'll feature an interview with Deborah O'Gara, who's a member of the Tlingit tribe, who is working for same-sex marriage in the Native American community. And at 6:30, Crystal Leedy will reflect on her experience at Code Pink's Mother's Day vigil at the White House. So you can just stick around all day. In between there, there's going to be some nice music. And, you know, why go anywhere else? Just listen to KBOO.
Why go anywhere else, indeed. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, did Laura really leave George?
Well, we don't
God,
know.
You know, it's the burning question of my mind this morning.
You mean that means I've got a chance?
Ew. The Xanax queen?
Oh, how much is a librarian?
Laura, not George. I like librarians.
Yeah, but librarians, she's Xanax to the max. Her eyes look like she's
hot.
Deep in outer space somewhere.
Honey, if you had to live with George.
Well, I wouldn't. I go how she stood it all these years.
Well, maybe George will go back to mommy.
Oh,
ew.
My God.
It's too early for these nauseating remarks, too.
You know what I think? You know when you have a dysfunctional family, you know, one person is really making life unpleasant for everybody else.
Uh-huh.
The family gets together, and they do an intervention.
An intervention.
Yes.
And maybe this is the kind of intervention George has been sort of asking for all this time.
Now,
we thought he was talking about geopolitics. He was talking about putting him away in a nice, quiet place where he can kind of,
yes,
find his inner child or something.
The rubber
right.
room, yes.
Yeah.
Where he can find his recovery process a little bit more intimately.
There we go.
Perhaps.
Yes.
We go. Well, anyway,
yes.
Well, I have to check that out.
Yeah, you know, I have to admit, this is the little story that made me go, oh my God. You know, after reading about, you know, war crimes and atrocities and genocide and horror, and, you know, fascism and the loss of civil liberties and, you know, things like that. This little tidbit brought a smirk to my face and a song to my heart.
When so, did you first read about it?
Yesterday, actually. Yesterday morning, Teresa brought it up to me.
There's been rumors that they're going to break up.
That she found it on the Wayne Madsen report.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's where it is.
I'll Google Wayne Madsen then.
Yeah, yeah. He, you know, I do recommend people read for those that have steady access to the internet. Read Wayne Madsen report. He's definitely an interesting source for news.
I'll do that. Well, okay. Well, carry on. Thank you.
All right. Take care. It's 8:45 in the morning, 15 minutes left, 503-231-8187, and good morning. You're on the air.
Hello? Hello, caller.
Okay.
Well, you know, I thought it was really interesting that yesterday on another radio station, which we won't mention, a guest was being...
I think you just did.
I didn't say what station it was.
All right.
A guest was being interviewed. He was the head of the Illahi Foundation. He was talking about their conference that they're having today. And he was saying, well, you know, he says, basically what we're going to try to do is we're going to try to come up with some regional solutions because, you know, we're going to have to, we're basically on our own as a region to deal with these locally until 2009 when we can hopefully elect an adult in the White House, which I thought was really very well put.
Indeed.
I mean, George Bush is not, he's not a normal adult. I'm sorry.
Well, he's ran several businesses into the ground.
Well, he's just...
And somehow or another, he's been hand-plucked and sat in the White House. And I think it has something to do, you know, with his family ties, personally. Just my personal assumption, my opinion. Our engineering pixie whispers in my ear, fate? Could it be fate? Okay. No,
he was
it's
just,
not.
He was a handy marionette, you know?
Right. Speaking of marionettes, oh my God, I finally saw Team America.
Oh, I knew what you were going to say.
Oh my God.
I saw it, but I haven't seen the unrated version, which I really would like to see.
Oh, really?
The unrated? Did you see the unrated version?
I think
version?
That's the one
yes,
I saw.
Yes, that's the one
I could
the
only
scene
imagine.
That was
yes,
deleted.
Yes, yes,
yes.
That would be. We can't talk about that.
Yes. Well, let's just say that it involves activities you don't usually see
so
puppets
you
doing
go.
On screen.
Or really anywhere else, now that you mention it, Melody.
Yeah, you don't usually see puppets doing a whole lot without someone moving them around, do you?
Yes, not really. Let's go ahead and take a call. Good morning. You're on the air.
Well, good morning.
How good morning, good LJ. Morning.
What's up, you guys? Okay, listen, here's the deal. The whole idea is to create an atmosphere of fear in us.
That's right.
Right? Don't be silly enough to buy it.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah. I mean, everything that you hear is, oh, the FBI is planting spies in City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Yada, 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 yada. We're listening to your phone conversations. We're listening. We are eavesdropping on your computer emails. And it's all about us stopping or trying to stop us from communicating and bonding with each other to create an atmosphere of fear and mistrust in our brothers and sisters.
That's so true.
And we don't have to buy it.
Right on.
Because it's just a bunch of hooey.
Well, and even if they're listening to my conversations, what are they hearing?
Yeah, right.
A bunch of, oh, hi, how you doing? Oh, what kind of wine do you want me to bring to dinner?
Sure,
and, you know,
sure.
Let them sit there and fall asleep from boredom.
Yeah, well, yeah. And let them listen. And maybe if they really listen to us, they might even join us.
Well,
wouldn't that be a scary thought?
Here's an idea.
I just have to share one more thing. As you probably already know, I'm just an old curmudgeon. I go to the Joe Ura School of Curmudgeonology.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Curmudgeonology. Don't give him any ideas. He might open a school like that.
He already has. He already has one.
Every Tuesday morning on KMU.
Oh, jeez. Anyway, my spirit of community was renewed last week when I hooked up with the folks at City Repair.
Oh, yes.
Oh, man. I got such a shot, because I tend to be a little cynical, but I got such a shot of optimism.
I tell you.
Oh, man.
I look forward to the Village Building Convergence every year because of that shot of optimism.
Yes.
And of course, this year I had the flu,
okay,
and I actually could not go out and play any of the days,
yes,
of focus for the Village Building Convergence. But as, you know, as folks from City Repair and VBC have said, it's becoming a year-round celebration of community.
And it is a beautiful thing, you
it
guys.
Is.
My dear friend Peg Millett was deeply disappointed that she came to town, like, days too late to, like,
yeah,
go and participate in any of it.
It is actually an unbelievable experience. I got a chance,
yes,
to a cook for him for a couple of days.
Yes.
And it was just like a whole team of people who left their egos at the door, and we fed between 150 and 200 people every night.
Yeah.
And it was just an incredible thing.
So,
for all you old curmudgeons out there,
or even young ones,
or even young curmudgeons, next year you need to hook up with the City Repair folk and get a shot of optimism.
And you don't even have to wait till next year, because
no, you don't really.
Several of the projects, you know, don't get finished in that week, because a week is a very short time to try to build something. And so, you know, there are finishing touches,
mm-hmm,
to be involved with. There are ongoing design projects.
Right.
There's the next year's call for proposals. There's talking to,
yeah,
your neighbors now and
right,
actually trying to see if maybe your very own street might want to host some sort of community
right
space. And that conversation starts now.
Okay.
I, 2 years ago, lived in a neighborhood where we wanted very much to have this wonderful, elaborate sort of intersection repair VBC project, and it was going to span two blocks or two intersections, one block, and it was going to do this and that, and it was really going to be great. And almost everyone in the neighborhood, you know, that surrounding many blocks, were on the same page. But we started the conversation too late in the year to really educate some of the other neighbors that weren't so familiar with the project, that hadn't heard about it before, all of a sudden were at their door going, hey, this is what we're going to do. Hey, you want to be a part of it? As opposed to, hey, what do you want to do for your neighborhood? You know, so it's like that conversation needs to start really early. I learned my lesson that year. That
and it's not too
it's
soon to start working for next
process.
Year right now.
Exactly.
I'm sure city repair probably gets lots of attention during VBC, but then when they really need help is all year
all
long.
All year long.
Okay, and it's never too late for my brothers and sisters to form community. We have a wonderful thing on our block that we call Cocktail Hour. Okay.
Yeah.
Every week or so, we call each other and we meet over at the over at one of the neighbors' porches, and we bring the beer and somebody brings some food, and everybody and the neighbors just get together and basically chew the fat, and it's just a wonderful experience.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
So I can suggest that to you folks.
Yes, all around.
Okay, have a great day.
Thank you. Bye. You too.
Bye-bye.
That shot of optimism, it's so good. Mm-hmm. Yay, village building convergence. Long live city repair. Let's go ahead, take another call. Good morning, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for a great program.
Can you speak up a little bit?
Yes. Thanks for a great program.
Uh-huh.
I think actually the balance of power is changing. I think unilateralism is over, and because of the massacres and because of the United States denying Palestinian funds, the United States and also the devaluation of the dollar, the United States faces a new reality, and it desperately must become interdependent, try to learn from Europe, from Canada.
Huh?
So I think it's very hopeful that if Cheney shoots a second person, he's going to be hit with a $50 fine. You know, that the system has some life in it.
How many people does he have to shoot before he actually gets arrested?
Well, it is very, very bizarre how he can simply kind of paralyze the whole system or exist in another reality. You would think he would just simply fade away.
I think he does exist in another reality, actually.
You would think he would fade away, you know.
I think he's the undead.
Well, you know, hope, I think, is a command. And so our hope, of course, is that the powers from outside the system will humanize, will show that people are often living in a frozen consciousness, in a tunnel vision, that they have missed their own gifts and powers and missed the wonder of interdependence. So the solutions are out there. The positive human alternatives are out there. It's just a will question of will, whether we're ready to face the reality of crisis and our neediness for a peaceful future. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your thoughts this morning. And looking at our need for interdependence, very important. I think, as the bumper sticker says, coexistence or no existence. I like saying sometimes. Good morning to our next, and I would imagine last caller, as we have 3 minutes left. Good morning.
Perfect. Hello, honey. This is Wade out in Beaverton.
Oh, hello.
Hi. Hey, I've got a couple of quotes. They're real brief, but they're to the point, and then I'll make my point, and it'll be brief as well.
Excellent, because we got 3 minutes.
If one man offers you democracy and another offers you a bag of grain, at what stage of starvation will you prefer the grain to the vote?
Uh-huh.
Bertrand Russell.
Yep.
When I was a boy, I was told that anybody could become president. I'm beginning to believe it. Clarence Darrow.
Who was that one?
Clarence Darrow.
Oh, right.
Democracy means government by discussion, but it is only effective if you can stop people talking. I must follow them. I am their leader. Andrew Law, Prime Minister of Britain, Great Britain.
love it.
All right, last one is, the genius of impeachment lay in the fact that it could punish the man without punishing the author. The office, Arthur Schlesinger.
Oh, dear.
All right, so this is my...
How are your thoughts wrapping all those up?
This is what I want to do. I don't know if this is possible, but I want to impeach Congress, too, because they just were falling all over themselves trying to prove how manly they were.
Yeah.
And that nobody thought that peace could be something that could be sold to the public. You know, of course
not.
Of course, they will benefit greatly, from that financially.
I appreciate that sentiment, man. I really do.
Yes,
because
they violated the Constitution.
It's like, I think impeachment of the so-called president is a good place to start.
Yeah.
It's a good place to start. It's not the be-all and end-all, and it won't fix all of our problems. And guess what? Once he's impeached, we still have all of the rest of the injustices to deal with that we had.
Exactly. He'll just be another scapegoat. And that's not going to solve anything.
Right. But I would like to, see him dealt with in an appropriate fashion for somebody who's done all of the things that his office has been involved with.
Drawn and quartered?
Yeah.
Launched into the sun on a rocket?
I don't go for medieval torture anymore.
No.
I thought that we were beyond medieval torture. So even for the selected, it's like...
Okay, launched into the sun on a rocket.
I just want him out of office and in a place where harm is contained. That's what I want.
Well, how about this for a thought? Everybody loves to hate Hitler, right? Or loves to hate Judas, whatever. You can pick out a number of people in the world.
Pick your enemy of choice.
Okay, but what if Hitler was only the manifestation of the hatred that the German people already had,
uh-huh.
and he just came along to let them have it at its worst?
All right.
Yeah? I just watched the movie The Pianist. I've seen a lot of movies about that time. It had a little bit different twist. But
well, we are out of time, my friend.
Right.
Thank you for your ponderings this morning.
You got it.
And
create a perfect day, everyone.
Thank
you. Take
your
power back. It's all there when you want it.
Thanks so much. And, there you have it. A whole bunch of thoughts strung together like fences. And thank you so much for listening and joining us this morning on Positively Revolting Talk Radio.
Keep on connecting those dots and being positively revolting till next week.
And happy birthday, Grandma.